Bonjour et bienvenue sur le podcast Insensé. Ici, Kelly Méran. Insensé, c'est le podcast en quête de sens. J'y interview de belles âmes qui alignent leurs valeurs, leurs rêves et leurs croyances avec leurs projets de vie. Et ça fait sens. Insensé, c'est aussi un podcast indépendant qui a besoin de vous. Pour le faire vivre, je vous invite à ajouter 5 étoiles et un commentaire sur Apple Podcasts. Ça m'aide énormément.
Voici comment l'histoire a commencé.
Je crois que ce surmenage nous guette.
La vie moderne étant ce qu'elle est.
Vous bossez, vous bossez, vous bossez, vous bossez.
What's your purpose? What's your cause? What's your belief?
C'est du bon pain.
Craquer au bureau.
Bosh.
Réfléchissez.
La vie a-t-elle un sens?
Qui suis-je?
Il est complètement fou ce mec.
Bonjour à toutes et à tous, c'est avec un tout petit peu de retard que je vous livre la dernière création sonore de Insensé. J'avais choisi une publication toutes les 2 semaines, cette cadence est assez intense, on a décidé d'en changer. Avec Benjamin, le sound designer fondateur de Station Whoosh, on réfléchit à pimper le contenu avec un format un petit peu différent, plus rythmé et encore plus agréable à l'écoute. Affaire à suivre dans les prochains épisodes. L'épisode qui suit est génial. Je l'ai enregistré au début de l'été. On voyage avec Clara Pushki en Hongrie. On la suit depuis ses premiers cours de danse à 5 ans au backstage du Lido jusqu'à aujourd'hui où elle a décidé de changer de vie grâce au yoga. Cet épisode est en anglais. Je vous demande donc encore un peu de patience, chers francophones, car d'autres épisodes sont en route. Please welcome Clara Pushki in English. Clara is an advanced certified Jivamukti yoga teacher. She's based in Paris. I met her in a studio called Kailo Yoga near Sentier. I had a chance to attend one of her yoga retreats in Goa, India, that has literally transformed my practice. Clara originally comes from Hungary. She has been dancing since the age of 5. She was always fascinated by the physical body and movements. Her education started with the Hungarian Dance Academy in classical ballet in Budapest. She became a professional dancer and performs in the Friedrichstraße Palace in Berlin and later at the famous Lido in Paris. In 2014, she attended a Jivamukti yoga class and fell in love. She's mystical, quite impressive. It seems like she has a complete control of every single millimeter of her body. She moves with grace and inspires others to do so. I am happy to welcome her on the Insensé podcast to discover her journey. In this episode, we are talking about resilience imposed to a professional dancer, along with learning and stereotypes that we have. We're talking also about Clara's shift from her dancing career to yoga, about philosophy and spirituality, and about what teaching teaches you. We're also gonna talk about boundaries to avoid burnout, even when teaching yoga, and defining the meaning of yoga, because cooking could be your yoga. Please welcome Clara Pushki. Oh, and I recorded that episode just after the end of the confinement. And long story short, we're pretty much in the same game as post-confinement. The yoga studios are now closed. But yoga studios in Paris have united their voice to take action and ask the French government to allow the reopening in secure condition. Because our mental health needs it badly. So inhale hope, exhale anger. Hope to see you soon in a yoga studio or a gym. And sorry in advance for the bits and pieces of yoga posture in Sanskrit you will find in this episode. Enjoy! Clara, welcome on the Insensé podcast. How are you feeling today?
Really good. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me and I'm really excited to be here. Thank you.
We briefly talked about it, but I wanted to know, what's the situation with the yoga teachers with this COVID fucking 19
situation? I think not just for yoga teachers, but probably for every person, this is an opportunity to question how can we learn from this situation. So we could look at the situation from a financial aspect, that, you know, we will be facing some challenges, and not just the yoga teachers, but studio owners, and I'm sure that other businesses have suffered as much as our business. But I'm on a very positive outlook, and I want to believe that, okay, maybe we've survived already these 2 months. And what is that in a larger scale of things? Like, what is that 2 months, you know, in a human's life? So it is a transition. And I think we could look at these 2 months as an opportunity for us to slow down, to maybe question, you know, certain things. Is this really what I want to do? How I want to do it? And it's almost like the world is also going through a transformation with every human living on it. And perhaps we could ask ourselves, how can we serve this newly aligned world after COVID? And what is it what we can do to make things work, you know? And yeah, for now, we are hoping for the best. That next week, little by little, we're going to be opening up, and it's not going to be the same. I don't think there's such a thing as going back to your normal life. Déjà, you cannot really go back. Like, that's quite impossible. So we can look at it, how can we move forward? And we don't know what will happen. And the simple truth is that in life in general, you just never really know. Like, I can't tell you what's going to happen even in the next 3 minutes. Probably going to ask me some questions. But do I really know what's going to happen? No. And now I think it's just even more, you know, that's exactly what this situation is teaching us, that now we just really have to find an ability to sit back and relax and just take it perhaps day by day. Because we just really never know. We don't have enough information, which can be super scary because you are really facing the unknown.
Let's appreciate it.
Try to appreciate it. Yeah. And it's not easy, and it's okay to freak out and, you know, and be down and feel all the stress of it. But yeah.
Did this 2 months allow you to do something that for you would be extraordinary or special or different?
These 2 months of the confinement, I don't know if I would. You know what? It's like very often with me personally, when I'm in an experience, doesn't matter what the experience is, I'll just go with it without really knowing. Like, I almost have no knowledge of what am I doing. And oftentimes later on, I look back at it and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. This has served me in such and such a way. So obviously, after the first few days, I think as most of my fellow yoga teachers, we just dove in and started teaching classes like crazy. And obviously, we just thought, you know, we just need to make this work somehow. And did we overdo it? I did, personally, yes. I went overboard. I think I even worked more, which I wasn't sure that it was possible, as opposed to in real life. And yeah, and now I'm looking back. It somehow went very quick. It somehow went rather slow. I don't know. It was a very bizarre time period. I felt like every day is 48 hours, yet 12. I don't know. It's between those two feelings. And yeah, a lot of my friends were like, oh my God, this is so great. I'm learning how to slow down. And I'm like, what are you talking about slowing down? I'm like, I'm getting 5 yoga classes a day in front of Instagram. Like, what are you doing slowing down? And for me, the slowing down is coming out now. After the confinement, which was like quite Speedy Gonzalez, now I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to chill for now a little bit. So, but I'm quite slow, actually. I know this about myself. I always need time to reflect on things and then, you know, like kind of contemplate, and then I put the pieces together.
It looks like a cycle mode, like you kind of go really fast on some periods of time and then look back and reflect.
Yeah, but it is the pattern of my life. I fly high, then I usually fall, I burn.
Is it a retreat? Crash?
It's a crash. Yeah, it's more like the phoenix, I like to say. You know, the phoenix flies high. I do things on 150, 200%. And then life usually says, no, girl, you know, stop, chill, relax. And then I learn how to do that. And then I restart. Yeah. as you said, cycles.
Mm.
Yeah.
You started your professional life, let's say, mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. dancing.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know, how is the life of a professional dancer when you're not on stage? How does it look like?
Mm. Well, I started dancing at the age of 5, probably because my kindergarten best friend started dancing, and I said, if she does it, I have to do it. I had no idea, again, what the hell I was getting myself into. And then I learned that I was quite talented for ballet, classical dance. That was my crush at the moment. And my mother, incredible person, she just always wanted to give me the opportunity to do whatever I wanted. So when I came home and I said, I'm going to be a ballerina, she's like, yes, Clara, you'll be a ballerina. Let's go for this. Mm-hmm. So I started at the age of 5. And then in Hungary, where I'm from, in Budapest, we had a 2 years kind of preschool experience before the academy. And I guess the academy has a very, very similar system, just like here in Paris. You go to school at the age of 10 once you're accepted to the academy, and you start at 8 o'clock in the morning, either with the school part or with ballet training. And in my case, I was at school till 6:30 every day. Saturday, we had still ballet training, and we started rehearsing quite early on at the age of 11 to be and participate in the theater, in the opera, in different ballets and operas. You know, we would be like the little butterflies on stage, or the little soldiers, and the little sheep, or the rat, or the bat, or whatever they needed, depending on which performance they needed children. So I started professionally working from the age of 11, and which sounds a bit weird. I talk about it now. I'm not sure if it's illegal. No, probably not. Anyway, but I was very used to, you know, this idea of like professional life, waking up and going to work. Although I wouldn't refer to my choice of career at that age, it didn't feel like work when I started dancing. It felt like a dream coming true, you know, and especially in Hungarian, there's a, probably in English, I would say that it's a profession. So it didn't feel like I was working, going to the theater almost every day, rehearsing till 8 p.m., having just one day off a week. So it gives you an incredible amount of discipline. Also at that age, while I was growing up, you don't really question those things, you know, like whatever they say you have to do, or that was a little bit the ballet mentality we received. It just seems normal. Like you got to work 8, 9, 10 hours, do it. And then just go home and sleep, or you have to do homework, obviously. And then you wake up at 5:50 every morning and you go back, and there's no like via côté really. And you don't miss it. And then you get 17, 18 years old and you're like, you know, all your normal non-dancer friends are like, you know, having their heart crushed and having their first experience with alcohol, and they smoke, and you're like, what? No, I'm in ballet school. Like, I can't do that. And I really didn't miss it. And then I moved to Berlin, and when I was 20, and then, you know, all these things have found me.
And all at the same time.
You know, one by easy. One, little by okay. little. Easy, easy, easy. And did I feel like I was missing out? No, no. And if I could go back in time, would I do it differently? No. I'm very grateful for the experience I had. Some people may refer to it as super harsh or full on. I don't know. But I'm half Russian, so maybe it's also a genetic thing that I'm, you know, like I'm used to this kind of like hard work. But one thing I'll say, it is really ingrained in you from a very young age that you have to achieve everything through really hard labor. And now through yoga and life experience, whatnot, taught me that it's not necessarily true. I don't want to say, you know, the harshness of it, and that's what I want to kind of like I'm finding ways to soften around it, so it doesn't always have to be like force, you know. But now I'm learning how to again just sit back, relax, and kind of welcome things into my life, as opposed to just like going pushing. Yeah,
there is something about dancing, and it's probably a stereotype, or I don't know how you say in English, idée reçue, about how hard it is, because basically you're learning to read a lot of bits and pieces of your body, which is also something that you find in yoga, but in dancing, learning to read your body and at the same time pushing it so much that you're almost messing it up.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I chose classical ballet, and I think now things have shifted and changed, and I think even the classical traditional ballet world has opened up a little bit. But back in my time, if you didn't have the perfect feet, the perfect knees, the perfect length of legs, the perfect length of arms, good luck surviving. So we would start, we were 40 girls and 20 boys in my class, and we finished 8 girls, 9 boys. So throughout the years, we would have 2 exams every year, every 6 months, and we would lose, you know, friends and girls and boys, because, you know, after each exams, they would be like, sorry, you're not going to make it.
Their choice or eliminated?
No, eliminated by our teachers.
Wow.
So, you know, and at the age of 11, 12, whatever, while you're growing up, this being your biggest dream, to receive a no is always harsh. But at that age, you know, it can be quite traumatizing, I think. And us who survived, just like in the Hunger Games, we did our best to kind of like mold in your body into that kind of frame what was expected from you. And we didn't really have back then a teacher or like an inspiring person, but again, they didn't know better, I think, back then. And I'm very thankful for my teachers, but if I would be teaching dance, I would be doing it a little differently. But you know, they didn't know better. They said, if you're not making it as a classical ballet dancer, then you're basically not a dancer. And I think after my class, you know, like, then we started receiving contemporary and modern education and all these ideas of, like, you know, not being perfect from the ballet, the classical ballet lens. They kind of started to like soften, and, you know, because in contemporary and in modern dance, the physical body has totally different requirements than in the classical world. So, you know, it's much more open, and nowadays you can see incredible artists performing on stage regardless of shape, length. You know, I mean, you could be whoever you want nowadays and still perform even classical ballet, I would think. I mean, now it's pretty incredible what's out there, but back in my time, it was quite narrow-minded, I would say. I make it sound like I'm really old. Anyway, my age is just a number.
No, but it's also maybe some part of your life that seems a bit
very far away. And yeah, very, very far, I would say, yeah.
Is there any learning from this period of time that is still helping you on a daily basis?
Well, a lot of the times people say, oh, yeah, but you're a dancer. That's why you can do all the poses in the asana practice, in the, you know, and I'm like, yeah, sure. Yeah, I have probably quite a deep body consciousness. Yeah, that I agree with. But it's a discipline part of it, maybe, which I could draw parallels between, you know, the practice of yoga. Then again, what was really hard for me is, you know, how to deal with my guilt trip, because we have a saying in ballet world, if you skip one class, you can feel it. If you skip two classes, they can see it, as in the audience. And yeah, and this is the mentality I've grew up with, you know, like, you don't skip. I would go to school even when I had 40 degree fever. I was like, my mom was like, you stay home. I'm like, nope, I'm going training. Yeah, and so I kind of struggled with that at the beginning, because, you know, different style of yoga will teach you different practices and style, entre guillemets. And, you know, some teachers will tell you, you have to practice every day and you have to do the whole series. And blah, blah, blah. And at the beginning, when I started practicing yoga, I was like, oh my God, yes, even if I'm super tired, even if I want to throw up from this, I'm just going to go and do it. And there it is again, like, you know, who are you serving with that mentality? But again, would I change it? Nope. Probably I had to go through all those things in order to get where I am today. Mm.
Do you have, from this period, so whether the time where you were a student or in that Friedrichstadt, I don't know how to pronounce it.
The palace in Berlin
or at Lido. Frustration or something that you had to overcome that you can think of?
Yeah, so both of those theaters where I worked as a professional dancer in Berlin and in the Lido, they the typical show must go on. You know, it's a Friedrichstadtpalast is a revue theater where I think they still perform 7-8 shows a week. So one day off and then every day a show and double in the weekend. And at the Lido, they would have 2 shows at night. And which is, it's just a physical work, you know, and...
How long is the show, just to have an idea?
So in Friedrichstadtpalast, it was almost 2 hours, and it would start at 7 p.m. And Lido, my time, we worked from 9:30 in the evening, and I think now they changed it to 9, I think. But Friedrichstadtpalast was more of a classical theater where we'd get out around 10:30 and 11. The Lido is a night... life work in a sense that you work until 1:15, 1:30 depending on how many people come and see the show, and there's this aspect of show must go on, like regardless of what's going on in your life, you go on stage, you put your makeup on and you just do your job, which can be quite severe and harsh, and especially that in both of the theaters the show, the repertoire doesn't change very often. So in Berlin we would have 2 different shows, one in December, like Christmas kind of thing, and but throughout September till June is the same show, like same choreography, same costumes, same lights, and you just repeat the same movement all the time. The Lido is even more extreme because they wouldn't change the show for a decade. I think Moulin Rouge is still the same show for 15 years now. Yeah, because you know tourists will come anyway, and but for the dancers that can be quite challenging to perform with the same enthusiasm, you know, with the same smile, with the same energy. And I mean, how many times can you kick, you know, in the same choreography throughout your life? A lot of times. And I think it's also a question of personality. I know people who are extremely happy with that type of work, and I know people who get extremely frustrated with that type of work. And I think at the end of the day, you want to question yourself, am I in peace with what I'm doing? And then no one else can tell you if that's the right thing for you to do or not. I'm very, very happy that I had those 3.5 years at the Lido. I left. It was my choice. Then I went back. It was again my choice. Then I left again. It was again my choice. You know, it's all part of the experience. You know, it's never just unicorns and rainbows anyway. So, yeah, but it teaches you resilience a lot. And one thing which the Lido has probably helped me a lot, because, you know, like you work with these incredible women and men together, and we go through stuff in life, you know, like divorces and you lose people you love and whatever. But just the fact that you always have to show up at work at the same hour, it kind of like frames your life. And I lost my best friend while I was working at the Lido. And I remember that actually just the fact that I had to go and put on my makeup and my fake eyelashes and my high heels and my plumes and my fake diamonds, whatever, just that kind of like helped me to, you know, to not to go insane, because it's, again, it's a very lonely life, you know, like you live not at night, but you know, it's a bit challenging to have normal friends with normal schedules. And although we have a great relationship with the girls where we were, you know, there were girls that we worked together with, but we have different day off, so we can't really do stuff together. And then you get home at like 3 o'clock in the morning in Saint-Germain in your 15 square meter apartment, and you know, you go to bed and you wake up at noon and you're always tired. And yeah, but again, it's a life, it's a choice. And
is there anything you wish you still had, or that you regret, or that you miss from
my dancing career?
Yeah,
you know, it's very interesting. When you're a dancer, you're surrounded with a whole lot of attention. A whole lot of attention from your teachers, from your ballet masters, from the audience. At the Lido, we have these incredible women who help you to dress up, because we don't have much time to change between the numbers. So sometimes you have like 3 people waiting with a headpiece, with your fake diamonds, with your new shoes, and they just like throw everything at you and you go back on stage. So there's a lot of attention all the time around you. And it's interesting that once you and just when you're on stage, obviously. And once you stop your career as a dancer, I think most people miss the attention, you know, that what you see, that you kind of always on the middle of it, and you gotta love it. Otherwise, it's very difficult, I think, to be a performer. Do I miss that? I don't know, because I still have a lot of attention as a teacher now, but it's a very different attention, because I feel like there's no hierarchy between teacher and student. I always refer to all of my students as teachers, and I refer to myself as a teacher as a student. And yeah, there's a lot of equanimity. So yeah, answering your question, I don't think I miss anything. Also, I've done everything I wanted to, so I have no frustration. Maybe, you know what I miss? The smell. Each time you enter a theater, it has a very particular smell. I don't know.
Could you describe
it's
it?
It's like the Lido has a very particular... Well, the Lido has a horse, déjà.
No way. Is there a horse inside?
Yeah, well, we have a horse who comes and goes. It's a superstar horse. So they bring him for every night and then they leave him. And then they take him. I don't know if it's a new show, so I'm not sure if they have a horse now. But in my time, they had a horse. Moulin Rouge has ponies still. Yeah. They don't live there again, but... No, this is not the smell I refer to. I don't know. It's just the... There is something, you know, like the leather of the shoes. There's this some sort of like a sweet smell when you get into the Lido, and you always go in backstage. And I remember you go in, like, you know, entrer les artistes, you go down. Also, we are always on sous-sol in at the Lido. You dress in the cave, kind of. The dressing rooms are downstairs. And then there are all these feathers hanging and, you know, these beautiful costumes, they kind of like sleeping each time when you enter the stage, I mean the backstage, and you know, as you get closer to the performance hour, like 8:30, like the Lido comes to life, all the dressers come in, all the musicians come in, all the technicians are already there, and then somehow you have the feeling that even the costumes are like kind of waking up and they become more colorful and more, you know, like shiny and whatever, and yeah, and then you put your makeup on and your dress on and you just go and perform.
It's beautiful to picture all those steps of the backstage.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Then had kind of a shift when you discovered the Jiva Mukti yoga. Mm-hmm. And you went for a teacher training. Mm-hmm. Did you know when you went for a teacher training that you were going to become a yoga teacher?
Obviously not.
So you just wanted to practice, did you?
I never know anything in my life. I don't know what I'm doing most of the time. I actually took a couple of yoga classes when I was 19, 20, because a really good friend of mine became an Ashtanga yoga teacher. And then I was like, oh God, this is definitely not for me. And then I did take one Jiva Mukti class, I think, when I was living in Berlin, and then I got out again. I was like, let me just go to the gym. This is really not my thing. And 7 years later, I was between Munich and Paris, and my boyfriend at the time said, do some yoga. This is going to be good for you. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. So I arrived studio and, you know, with this attitude of like, I know it all. And, you know, I was like, how hard this can be. I'm going to put my leg up and whatever I have to do. And I remember my teacher, Petros, was like, shall we do it correctly this time? And I was like, yeah, okay. And then, I don't know, there is something when you meet the right teacher. And I believe, and this is what I tell to my students now, that when the time is right, you'll attract the right type of teacher. How do you know? You just feel that this is the right type of teacher for you. And so there were no questions. I'm not sure if it was Jiva Mukti itself. I'm not sure if it was his personality, which I felt connected to. There was just something. And that little something was enough for me to stay with it. And then when I came back to Paris, I Googled Jiva Mukti Yoga Paris. And then I found the studio and Carolisa, the Jiva Mukti teacher at the time, who's still teaching here. And I started following her classes, but I was still a dancer. At that time, I worked for a contemporary company. So I had a lighter schedule, not as severe as with the Lido. So I had a lot more free time and I said, okay, why not? Let's just do this. And I practiced for 3 months on and off, like once a week or something. Again, I was much more focused on the physical aspect of the practice by then, because, you know, a lot of the times that's the angle we come into from to yoga, because the body is something what we really feel familiar with. And so I remember I went back in December to Munich and I asked Petros, I was like, am I ready? Do you think it's a stupid idea? And then he had a very bumper stickery answer. He said, follow your heart. And I was like, okay. And so, and then he also said that, listen, Clara, if you really want to do this, our teachers are quite old. And Princess, this is probably maybe not the last, but one of the last teacher trainings. So he's like, if you really are into the method, go to a teacher training where Sharon and David are present, our teachers. And so I remember I was in Strasbourg performing with Rachidou Hamdan in a contemporary company. And I was in Strasbourg sitting in the hotel. I opened my computer, I put YouTube, Jiva Mukti Yoga. And then I found this YouTube video of now friend and wonderful teacher Gabriela's YouTube video, her teaching in India, an hour and a half Jiva Mukti Yoga. And then I remember I just looked at her in her leggings, bare feet, talking about downward facing dogs, whatever. And I was like, could I do this for a living, telling people how to breathe? Nah, yeah, I can do this for a living. And that's where I decided in Strasbourg in February, and then I'm going to go to New York 2 weeks later. So I called New York and they were like, sure, send us the money and you're more than welcome to join. And there I was, like, one day before the deadline. I booked the flight. I got the money together, which is not easy. And there I was 2 weeks later in Rhinebeck, New York, with 75 people, all dressed in white. And I had no idea what the Bhagavad Gita was, or, you know, like the Upanishads. I was like, why we have to stand up when Sharon and David enters the room and kind of like bow down. I was like, yeah.
Did
and
you
I don't want to make
scared
it sound
from the rituals and
yeah,
ceremonies?
I don't want to make it sound like it's a sect, but it's just that there's just such a genuine respect towards Sharon and David, who are pretty incredible teachers. And they gave me so much that now as I'm sitting here, I would have no problem literally probably bowing down in front of Sharon Cannon and David Lai. Because again, it's a very personal experience, but the teacher training is so transformational and in so many levels. And we had a beautiful, beautiful group of 75 people. And I think most of us would share this same opinion that there's something very magical. And again, I don't know if it's Sharon, if it's David, it's a combination of two. It's because you're in this incredible place up in Rhinebeck.
Let's zoom in shortly on Jiva Mukti Yoga. Jiva means soul and Mukti, liberation.
So it's just this very basic idea of that whatever you perceive as life from the physical aspect is probably seen as an illusion. And I don't want to say that the goal of the practice, but maybe one idea of the practices is to liberate your soul from this physical experience. So maybe you heard the word moksha before, which means liberation. So just this understanding, and then again, it's person to person if you agree with this or not, that, you know, there maybe be something else after this physical life, and, you know, that the soul is never going to perish, that the soul lives on.
Liberation of the soul in Sanskrit. Isn't it beautiful? This yoga that I love practicing has been created in the 80s by Sharon Gannon and David Leif. And one of the particularities is that each month, worldwide, Jiva Mukti Yoga studios and teacher align on the focus of the month.
So the idea is that wherever you practice in the world, we would be all talking and sharing about the same theme, which can be about philosophical topics, about political topics, about just how to be more aware of your mat. Then you have the vinyasa aspect when you practice the postures. We are encouraged to chant, but again, it's not an obligation to chant on a class, because also it's the form of yoga when you connect your voices and you chant the Sanskrit chants. And then usually there's a 5-minute seated meditation to kind of contemplate at the end and just connect to to that aspect of the practice, because I think very often nowadays when you say yoga, everyone is like, oh yeah, downward facing dog, I need to put my foot behind my head. But in Jiva, we try to encourage people to also discover seated meditation. Again, it doesn't necessarily need to be seated, but that's one form of the practice. And yeah, and that would be it, basically.
I have the feeling as a attendee, I don't know how to say, what am I when I come to a class?
You mean an LF, a student?
LF, a student, yeah, exactly. That it's a very complete class because
yeah,
it has
so
all those bits and pieces yeah. that comes together. And
well, I don't teach Jiva Mukti anymore, but yeah.
Why not?
Why not? Why did I give up? You know, we were not many at the beginning, and Kahwa, she did an incredible job and effort to kind of like keep us moving together. And I discovered so many other teachers along the way. And I'm a type of person that whenever I learn something, I want to go and teach it right away. Not necessarily because I think that I'm able to transmit, but I kind of, I believe in, and actually Sharon says this, she says that if you really want to know something, you have to teach it. And I think it's a very interesting mindset. So you learn something and you take it into the shala with you, and you, and I just share it right away with my students. So,
so from the moment you decided to go take your training, then mm-hmm. you were on this new path, mm-hmm. let's say, does it take a long time to, how do you say that in English? To make it a living? To live from
oh, the
yoga
financial
teaching?
Reality of
financial
being a yoga teacher.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's a very, it's a personal experience. Maybe other people had a different experience. I was quite lucky. I've landed in 5 yoga studios in the first week as
oh,
a
wow.
subbing Mika de Brito. And, you know, and he has a, until today, he's a very established teacher, over 20 years of practice. And then here I am coming like, salut tout le monde. All right. Downward facing dog it is. Okay, let's do this. And it just, I was in the right place in the right moment, I suppose. So I got work right away. That was not a problem. And the financial aspect, yeah, it wasn't easy. I'm not going to lie. It wasn't easy. And I had a very supportive boyfriend at the time. And, you know, a lot is thanks to him. Also, the Jiva Mukti teacher training is quite pricey. So, yeah, it wasn't an easy living. I'm not going to say that. But I feel very blessed right now of where I stand, also from the financial aspect. So I just want to encourage people, and I want to tell you that it's doable. You can do it, and you're not just going to be eating bread and butter for the rest of your life. No. Also, I like to think of money as energy, and maybe you're not going to have a star salary, whatever, in the first month. But I want to believe that things kind of balance themselves out, you know? So the amount of energy you put in your teaching, in your class, you know, sooner or later, I want to believe that the universe will, you know, give you back. Mm. Not maybe, and maybe it's not going to be money, you know, but maybe, you know, I found my apartment thanks to teaching yoga, because I would always ask my people like, do you have an apartment for me? And then I found that, and you know, it's an energetic exchange, or that's how I feel it.
Mm. And there's several signs also, like you said, that you were on the right path, kind of. Like
yeah,
things come
yeah,
together.
And it's, I'm sure it's not the last station on this path, you know.
For sure.
We'll see what's next. I don't know.
I wanted to do a little zoom in your practice, because what I like, even though I haven't attended a class for quite a while now, is this, the sequences are really creative. It really feels like a choreography.
You really think so?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, wow.
I do. Some
other people told me that too, but then I see other teachers where I'm like, wow, how can you even remember that? I don't know. It, to me, it's very organic what I do, obviously, because it comes from my brain. And then someone asked me the other day if I wanted to do a teacher training on sequencing, and I was like, hell no, because I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea. I can very often... I didn't let you ask a question. I'm really sorry.
No, go for it.
Sometimes I hear music. Like I put my playlist together and I hear one music. And sometimes I also call my assistant Elsa.
She hates me for that, I think. And I WhatsApp her, I'm like, give me a posture, just one posture. And she says something like, whatever, kaputasana. I'm like, thank you. But I kind of need that external input. I mean, I could have thought of kaputasana myself, but, you know, I just need her to say, let's do that. And I'm like, okay. And then I kind of like, you know, build it from there. But I usually feel very inspired by other teachers. Like yesterday I gave a class with my friend Kat, and I saw her sequence quickly on Instagram, and I was like, I'm totally going to steal this. Mm. So then I took three postures from her, and then I went, but that's probably the dancer in me. But then there are other pretty amazing yoga teachers here in Paris with dancing background. And I think they dance.
It influences a lot the sequences and how you go from one to another.
Yeah. Also, those people who practice with me, they always know that if I go and study with someone for a day, 3 days, whatever, workshop, teacher training, I come back a little bit like I'm like a sponge. I take that energy and information from the teacher, and I try to reconstruct it. Am I stealing? Yes, probably I am, whatever. But they stole from someone else. It's fine. Mm-hmm. And but then it kind of, I mold myself around it, and then, you know, and it becomes who I am. Mm-hmm. Like when I came back from Donna, her practice, right, she's almost 80. So her physical practice or what she teaches us is very, very slow. So I came back and there was a month here because I keep my sequences for months usually. Then when I didn't even put the music on, it was just like a sound. And some people hated it because they were like, where's your cool music? I'm like, nope, no cool music right now for you. Just zone out on this sound, you know, like, and we were like moving like a sloth. And some people loved it. Some people hated it. They were like, I'm not coming back until you change. I'm like, all right, see you in 3 weeks then, you know? And then I kind of just like, kept, I mean, that was probably a bit extreme what I did in that month. But then again, it taught us how to slow down. Yeah, because I would want to transmit whatever I learned from her.
Yeah, that's what I find beautiful about it. It's like you allow also your student to explore
always
your new learnings.
Yes, and they never my students, ever. They never my, I sometimes I refer to as my students, but they never my students. People are free to do whatever they want to do, and I will always encourage every student to go to whoever class you want to whoever studio you want to. We never own people. Own is the word. Yeah. Never. Because
there is another particularity during your class is you often close your eyes.
Always close my eyes.
You always close
your eyes. Most often. Yeah. Sometimes I get hit by the head. I see much more when I close my eyes.
Okay. You visualize?
I feel. I can't explain it. It's something I do. It's very tiring for me to teach a class with open eyes. Very tiring. Sometimes I do it. And even on Instagram, I was like, shit, I need to open my eyes now. And now I started teaching on Instagram with some students, and actually Elsa, my assistant. And even then I was like just walking around in the living room like, yeah, a little bit like Stevie Wonder, you know. And I connect. And I just feel much more. You know, when I teach, I'm not really there. Like, I'm not really there. And you know, sometimes I get to a studio in a really shitty mood because something has happened. And I walk around like a bitch. Sorry for that word. And, you know, like just like... Aah! But the moment I sit down and close my eyes, and I know that can come across as quite scary, or some people find me quite intimidating as well, because like, who is that now? But the moment I close my eyes and I kind of have that moment of connection with the earth, and then I give it all, and I'm there for the students. And again, it's such a learning experience for me, for them. And also after the last om, after I bow my head to the ground and I'm sincerely grateful for everyone's presence, I'm out of there. And for me, this is the only way I can survive. I cannot, you know, it's like there. You have to know your boundaries. You really have to know. I had a very tough 6 months as a teacher in my life, not 2 years ago, when I thought I'm going to go like completely mental, because I just kept on giving and giving and giving. And I was doing it from my own energy, and I wouldn't be able to sleep, and I would feel like I've done 40 chaturangas on every class with everyone together. I would hear my own voice, and, you know, I would see people's bodies constantly when I would
trying to sleep. It was just, well, probably on a way towards a burnout or something. And then I met an incredible teacher, I can say, who taught me how to channel through. Because I think often, especially when you're a young teacher, you get in there and you're like, I'm going to do the best and I want to be there for everyone and I want to support everyone in this thing. That, but oftentimes we forget that the person who comes into your class is just an hour and a half of their lives. You know, most people have their dramas, their stories, their families, their divorce, whatever. And we don't know these people's stories. So, you know, you cannot impose the your perfect class or your idea of your perfect class on your students. I go in with like zero expectation. You know, I offer something. If they take it, yes. If they take it, no. It's fine. Because, and it's not that I don't care, because I care a whole lot, but you just cannot take it personal. Because, and I think when people start to take it personal, also, when, you know, sometimes I come out and they're like, oh my God, it was such a great class. And some people are going to be like, nope, it was shit. And sometimes I get, I'm like, oh my God, this was horrible. They go, oh my God, I had the best epiphany ever. You just never know. You just never know. It's such a personal experience. And some people just need a pat on the shoulder and say, well done, good. Child's pose, good. Some people need Dvipada Shirshasana, go for it. You know, but you just never know. And you can never have an idea of, like, you know, how people should be, because it's violent.
And what was it like, you were going too far, you said, like, maybe giving too much?
Yeah, I think, yeah. Also, I think at the beginning, we don't know how to, like, at the very beginning when I started, there was an opportunity for a class. I go, yeah, sure, I'll do it. Yeah, sure, I'll do it. Yeah, 5 classes a day, I'll do it. Of course I'll do it. Like, there's no way that I'm not going to do it. And I had 5 classes on a Tuesday for years. Now I don't know how the hell I survived. Would I change it? Probably not. Because again, it was teaching me about something, about my own stupidity mainly, probably. But also you learn, you know, how to push your limits, which can be interesting as an experience again. Yeah, but I just took up too much. And so grateful that I had those 6 months. So grateful now, because without that, I wouldn't be where I am right now, you know. But again, you cannot fast forward. I think one thing why we need yoga so much right now in the world we live in, and it seems like even the world itself have caught up with this idea that everyone needs to slow down and needs a big reset with this COVID situation, is because it's not an instant, you know, transformation. You can have moments of like, oh, yeah, I got it, but you're gonna stay with it for a long period of time, I think. And yeah, and it's something which will serve you for the rest of your life. And even when you don't practice, I think you practice, you know, because it just frames your life after a while.
There is so I want to zoom in the yoga meaning, because I guess not everybody that will listen to us practice yoga. What does yoga mean, and what is it except the asana, which are the posture, asana or the posture?
The word yoga is like the root, the yo, is to yoke together, to bring two things together. So some traditions will say that it's bringing movement together with breath. Some traditions will say bringing the spirit, the soul, together with the body. But again, there is this other aspect of the yoga philosophy which says that it's about liberation, which is about separating the soul from the physical experience. So these are the two pillars, I guess, how you could look at it. And as I said, nowadays we refer often to yoga practice as the asana, the postures. And then again, many different aspects of yoga, the meditation, you can practice pranayama, the breathing, you can practice just mindfulness. And for me, that's very much in the yoga practice. You can practice just observing, you know, yourself or the world, and and sit back and contemplate. And, you know, you can do many, many different things. It's interesting why we connect it to the physical aspect of it. And again, I think it's also quite natural because the body is what we refer to in the most simple way. Like, you know, if I start to explain the body, then chances are that most people will understand. If I'm going to ask you to sit down and breathe and observe your thoughts, chances are that you're going to look at me and ask for a beer instead of, you know, it's almost like the asana can trick you into it, you know, because there's the challenging aspect. It's fun to go in your hands. Yeah, sure. You will also deal with physical pain because of our lifestyle, because we sit in a car or, you know, like whatever we do. And the asana practice can be seen as very therapeutic. So maybe you're going to connect from that aspect. And yeah, but it can be many, many different things. And the older you get, I think the more you start to slow down. And at the beginning, you're very, very excited about the physical practice. And then it's beautiful, actually, this transformation. And then you just maybe want to sit and be quiet for a minute or two or 20 or 1 hour per day. And that becomes your practice. It can be anything. One of my teachers in Portugal, his practice is to garden every day for an hour. He's silent and he goes and picks his berries. And that's his practice. Another teacher of mine surfs. Amazing Ashtanga, blah, blah. But surfing is when he completely disconnects or reconnects, depending on how you see it. And he's one with the waves. And that's his yoga. Mm. And then he's going to come into the shala and give this, yeah, amazing assistant, again, like drawback or whatever. But, you know, I don't think that yoga is about including things. I think yoga is about including things, different disciplines and different aspects. And cooking can be your yoga as well. You know, you're preparing food with so much love for the people who come and see you. I mean, that can be seen as yoga as well.
And what is your practice?
Oh, God. Right now, what is my... I can tell you what is my practice today.
It changes today, often?
Oh, yeah, probably minute by minute. I'm injured for the very first time of my life, which never happened before with me, and never as a dancer. And, you know, he'd hear you like pull that and put that and whatever. But it's the first time that I'm asked not to do much for 3 weeks, and it's a very new experience. Was I happy? Nope. Did I say I'm going to push through it? Yes. And is it teaching me a whole lot? Yes. What is it teaching me? How to sit back and relax. And how not to be also attached to the practice. You know, that's also so interesting. Like because there's a natural evolution. I still remember the question. There's a natural evolution of like what you're achieving little by little, physically, emotionally. But how is it that you're able to also let it go? Like, I've done that. Great. Okay. Is this really determining who I am? I don't think so. Yeah, so today my practice is not to push. And I'm doing this workshop, as I mentioned, which is an Ashtanga workshop, but I'm just doing the talking because we have a lot of sharing and journaling and whatnot. And my practice was yesterday, actually, to look at these other amazing 12 women who are able to move right now. And I just sat there and I observed everyone's downward facing dog. And that's it. Did I want to move with one? Yes. Could I? Nope. I said, no, I'm not going to do it.
Where did you get injured?
Why?
Where?
Oh, where?
In your body?
Hips, yeah, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah, it's teaching us a whole lot. Injuries mm-hmm. are amazing though, you know, because when you move with... I was so blessed that I've never had pain ever, almost. And I know people who practice with pain and I always admire them. I'm like... I always said, if I would have pain, I would never dance and I would never practice yoga. I'm like, that's stupid. No, I'm not going to do that. And you move with so much more awareness, And it's teaching you a whole lot about, you know, how to listen to yourself. And I mean, this is what we hear all the time, but it really is. And there's a moment when there's no more running away. You know, there's a moment when you got to stop, you got to take a moment, have a good look in the mirror and start the work. start the work.
I agree. I started the confinement with my right shoulder. I fell really badly. So I had my arm completely wrapped up, and I didn't realize everything I could do with my right hand. I'm right-handed, and how much you need to read things differently to do things, but also just understand, okay, I can't do that. I just need to stay and wait. So yeah, great learning, and by accepting as well, because I was in this retreat and I couldn't do everything I wanted, and I was like, no, but this was so important for me, why is it happening now, and fighting against it until you start in accepting, and oh, I can move it again a little bit, and then something new happens. And
you kind of drop the resistance. Mm. You kind of start to soften around it, and when it, and I do believe that also with pain, that when it doesn't serve you anymore, when the message has been, you know, transmitted, then perhaps the pain will ease too.
Did you know that all the postures that we practice in yoga called asanas, like the downward facing dog, the cow, the crow poses, etc., are a posture that all came together to allow you to sit comfortably on your ass. Can you picture the seated position most people use to meditate with? This is it. All the yoga postures are made with this very simple idea that the more you practice, the more comfortable you are to meditate, to connect yourself to earth. Let's go back to Clara now. We're talking about her rituals and grounding.
Throughout the Jiva Mukti teacher training, I didn't know much about the altar, the tradition to have an altar at home. Also, I'm not a Hindu, I'm not a Buddhist, but I've been interested in both of those practices. So I read a little bit, and there is, for me personally, there is something very... And I feel the same energy in your house, actually. There's a very, I don't know, it's just very grounding for me to build a part in your apartment which serves as an altar. And maybe you don't have a seated practice, and, you know, you don't have to, like, stare at the Buddha forever. She's looking at me right now. But probably that's why I'm sitting here, because it reminds me of my own. But, you know, it's just each time I get home and then I'm like, oh, you know, so I have like a candle ritual. Like, I'm obsessed with candles anyway, but, you know, like, it's just no matter what goes on in my life, whatever, I go home and then I put that candle on. It's probably the sun. For British people, it's probably the tea. For me, it's the candle, you know, like, and it can be really anything, I suppose, but. And maybe we all have it, we just don't really notice that we all have these things which kind of, like, you know, brings you back to that safe space. And, you know, some people will say, yeah, it's my downward facing dog and my sun salutation on the mat. And, you know, that's not me. No. Yeah, especially not now. But it's probably that. And then I can just spend, like, minutes and sometimes even hours just, like, rearranging stuff.
Okay.
I also like to fold clothes, by the way.
Oh, do you?
I think it's extremely meditative, because that's the only thing you focus on. Like, you fold, you know, kind of like Marie Kondo your house. A friend of mine, David, he traveled to India when he was 16, and he told me that he got one of the most amazing teachings from a Buddhist monk. And I was like, what was it? And I was expecting, like, a sentence which is going to change my life. And David was like, Clara, I went into the temple and I saw this man folding his socks. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, that's it. And he's like, how he was folding his socks. That was it. Like, he was just so absorbed in that action of folding his socks. I'm like, I'll take that with me. Yeah, so I think about that. I think I'm folding my yoga leggings every day.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to switch to a nonsense question, which is a question insensée.
Dis-moi.
Did you feed the black wolf or the white wolf today?
Oh, okay. white. The white one. Today I feed the white one.
Today you feed the white one?
Yeah, the white one. Yeah, sometimes I feed the black one as well because I think it's important. Because the white one exists without the black one, in my opinion. I think those two come in pair. You know, the light needs the shadow needs the light, otherwise it won't work.
Just after this nonsense question, there are a bit more personal question, and the first one is, why do you do what you do?
Why am I doing? Again, honestly, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know why I do it. And I think until I don't know the answer, that's going to be the durée until I'm going to do it.
Does it make sense to you?
In my head, it does make sense. But again, I don't question this. Why am I doing it? It's almost like it's something greater that I am. You know, I have a calling for it and I'll do it. But it's a very good question. I wouldn't be able to tell you why. Because I feel like whatever I would say, like, because I like human connection, because I like to serve. It's none of that. And it's probably all of that, you know. It's just such an organic way for me to be where I'm right now in my life. And I'm very, very grateful, again, for all this experience that I can share. Yeah, but I don't really question why.
What do you really want?
Oh, that's again, like a $50 million question. I cannot tell you what I want, but the older I get, I have more idea about what I don't want.
Okay.
That's for sure. And the what I want, I honestly, I don't dream, I don't project, and I don't plan, ever. It's just the way I am. Because I thought, I've learned throughout this experience called life that the best and the worst things, they just come like a deja vu, you know, like, boom. And life is such, again, in my case, that this lesson comes up for me every day. There's something happens with me every day. Did I know it's going to happen? Nope. And it either turns out to be great or not so great. And I don't know. I just don't know. So what do I want? I don't know. What is it? What I really do? I want to open a studio? No. Do you want to stay in Paris? I'm good in Paris right now. I'm going to stay here? I don't know. And I'm not like clinging, or I try not to cling, you know, to certain experiences, situations. I just really feel like everything is so fragile, you know, in life. The human encounters, like now we are sharing this moment together. And when I leave, it's going to be part of my past. And I'm just really enjoying this right now with you, whatever we are doing. And then I'm going to move on and meet someone else. And then I'm going to be kind of there with that person. And then probably something else is going to happen after. And that's it.
Presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I've been always been this way. Like those courses of like visualizing the future in the mood board in 5 years, does never, because it's just, I just keep it blank. Like, yeah.
Ocean of possibilities.
It is really. It is really.
Can you tell me what is sacred to you?
Sacred? Mm. Time. Mm. Time is sacred.
Okay.
Yeah, because we don't have much of it.
What helps you to connect to yourself?
With myself? Mm. Oh, that's a good question. What helps me to connect with myself? I think I'm quite connected. Sometimes I get very confused with myself. So if the question is, how can I reduce the confusion? Mm-hmm. Also, I just need to give it time because I know myself by now quite a bit. Not entirely, though. I still surprise myself from time to time, even after 21 years living on this planet. you see what I just did there? Whatever. It's just like trying not to judge, maybe, you know, and even if you mess it up, which you will always, it's okay. Like, just come back to this feeling of like, okay, c'est pas grave, you know, it's not the freaking end of the world. Yeah, we're still here. The world is still turning. Actually, sometimes I like to look up at the sky and the stars, and there's also a really silly YouTube video which I sometimes like to look at. I think it's called The Journey of a Ten. I think it's 5 minutes, and maybe you've seen it. And it starts from a man's hand, and basically the camera, it's like from the 70s, and where none of us were born, and the camera goes out 10 meter by 10 meter. And so you see New York, and then you see America, and then you see the world, and then you see, you know, our galaxy, and it just goes. And I always look at this thing when I'm, you know, when I'm a bit lost, and I'm like, wait a minute, what is my problem again? Like, you just put yourself in a different perspective. Like, is my problem that I didn't get paid from a studio 2 weeks ago? Like, wait a minute, there's just like so much more out there. And then the camera goes back, and then it goes in back to this gentleman's hand, and then it travels down through the skin and the muscles and the bones and the and they try to do the same things. It's like, it's very fascinating. And
it's a beautiful meditation to do.
Yeah, as well. But it's the same thing, I think, when you go up to a mountain and you look down and you suddenly feel so insignificant, really. Mm. You know, we walk around in this world thinking, yeah, we are the most important thing, but no.
Mm.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, Sharon, told me, I was stuck on something, I don't remember what, but de-zooming. Like, just remember this word, when you're stuck, just de-zoom. It really does help.
Yeah.
You take that
or sometimes
focus and
when you have, you know, when you go, when it seems like, you know, you have some sort of dramatic story going on, and sometimes I think of other people who are not so lucky as I am, and, you know, and you see a lot of that in Paris, but, you know, you just open the news, whatever. But, you know, and then again, it's just like a little slap in the face of like, wait a minute, am I really suffering here right now? And it's not that you're not taking yourself seriously, and I'm not, you know, and I don't want to belittle everyone's, you know, suffering, but it's just good to take that perspective sometimes, you know.
Is there an advice you want to give to Clara, teenager?
Teenager? No, but the Clara who was 7, I can give her an advice.
Okay.
Because that was an important age for me. You're never alone, because you will always, always, always have you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a motto or a mantra or like a sentence?
Maybe this is it, that you're never alone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That maybe there's more which is connecting us than disconnecting us. Yeah.
Okay. An inspiring person or a mentor?
Okay, but this is just me because I'm completely... at times, I can just walk around in Paris and see people and I can be like, oh my God, this person is so beautiful, without actually knowing who that person is. Like, I don't know. I have these bits and pieces which I still remember. I don't know why. Once I saw a homeless person, this can sound a bit weird maybe, who had a cassette recorder from the 90s, I don't know, and he was just like, putting his music on, you know, and the headphones on his ears, and he was sitting in Republic or whatever, but with so much care, and I don't know, it just felt like this person had that object and nothing else in his life, and I just stood there mesmerized, like, you know, how important that thing was for him. You know, sitting, and I don't know, there are these moments which happen, which you can experience that, I think, anytime, anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, we were in south of India with my friend backpacking, and we met this guy, and he was just sitting there in the shade selling mangoes, or God knows what he was doing. I was just like smoking, and he was just like all day sitting there. And I thought, this guy has no distraction, like no book, no iPhone, no nothing. He has his cigarettes, yes, but, you know, he was just like, I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, just waiting for a customer to show up. And I'm like, wow, put someone in Paris out there and, you know, tell them to wait for a customer to show up. I mean, yeah. So
you get inspired by
people, by life. I love to
moments.
Sit in a cafe, so...
Yeah,
Emmanuel Macron has to open these cafes very soon for Clara.
I'm dying for the restaurant to reopen.
Yeah, it has been always my favorite thing to do, actually. That's where I recharge the most, maybe. Just sit down and I'm like, geek out on people.
God, people are going to be like, here's the weirdo again. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just fascinated by this thing called life, you know, because again, it's so precious. Very precious, this human life is.
Do you have an advice for someone that is trying to align who they are and what they do?
An advice of how to do it?
A question, an exercise, an exercise. Inspiration, a book.
Go and get into yoga class.
Start practicing yoga.
It is a good path. I think it helped me a lot.
I'm sure it is. Well, come and try, of course. My teacher today, Santina, she said, like, you can do no matter how many amount of postures you can do, but until you're not willing to do the inner work, nothing will happen. And one thing I learned from her 2 weeks ago, because I did another workshop for her, she said, until you don't get to know yourself in your deepest misery, you cannot tap into your true potential. And I think we like to distract ourselves with a whole lot of things nowadays. And we don't want to get into the gooey, dark parts of ourselves. But you can lie to anyone. You can't lie to yourself, you know. And there's a day when you'll have to sit down and kind of have a really good look at it, I think. And you'll take it from there, you know. But you're not alone. I mean, we all go through the same thing. You're never alone because you always have you. There you go. But you will feel lonely at times, for sure. Yeah.
I'm jumping on the lying because I want to ask you the next question is, I want to know two truths and one lie about yourself. Don't tell us which one is.
Oh my God. I wanted to marry Michael Jackson. That just breaks my heart, your reaction to it.
I'm sorry. I'm wondering why, but okay, yeah. I have one more question.
Well, oh God, this is so hard. More. Oh God, wait. I talk to flowers.
Okay.
And I'm a vegan.
Okay, noted. Now, I'd like to present you.
Oh.
This little lady. Oh. Her name is Ashanti. I'd like to lend it to you.
Yes.
And she's a doll, which she comes from Ghana. And over there, she's a fertility symbol. And now, I don't know why you're smiling, but here on the podcast, so I take her on every single interview, and she's kind of the magic stick and the fertility of ideas that make sense. And what I would like to offer you is to make a wish for this world to make a bit more sense.
Am I verbalizing it or am I doing it in silence?
Yes, please.
Oh, for the world. Now we're getting very deep here. Okay, what's her name again?
Ashanti.
You're going to make this happen for us?
Yes. She's going to contribute to it.
Oh, okay. How would I like to see the world? Living in a world with less violence. Violence towards each other, violence towards ourselves. Just a little more softness. Maybe. That could be a good one.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ashanti.
Thank you, Ashanti.
One last question is, can you think of anyone that should come on the Insensé podcast that has a line, what they do, what they believe in, what they do for a living maybe, or a project that seems to be...
Another person you should interview? Who lives in Paris, clearly.
Distance now works.
Oh, yeah,
I have experienced the distance recording.
It's true. Maybe you should have Richard Pilnick.
Richard Pelman.
The yoga photographer.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are these those beautiful pictures the black and white? Ones.
Yeah, mm. But he's a very, very special one. And I think he has a lot to share and give.
And he manages to capture some.
Yeah, that too. Strength. And yeah, that too. And now he's transforming his art to something else, which is also a very interesting process for him because he can travel. Yeah, he's a special one.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Will do. Thank you so much, Clara.
Thank you, Kelly. Merci, merci.
Merci pour votre précieuse écoute. Retrouvez tous les liens utiles et sensés en description de l'épisode. Un grand merci tout particulièrement à Benjamin, fondateur de Station Whoosh. C'est le magicien du son derrière le podcast. Après 10 années dans l'univers du son, il élargit son activité pour proposer une offre pour les podcasteurs. Conscient qu'il y avait des contenus de qualité sur les ondes digitales, mais trop peu de techniques, voilà ce qu'il propose, de la formation, de l'aide au setup des outils, mais aussi du montage et du mixage. Rendez-vous sur stationwhoosh.fr pour pimper votre son. Station WOOSH.fr. Comprenez bien le sens, qu'il soit propre, sale ou figuré. Sans aller dans mon sens. Non, ne me brossez pas dans le sens du poil. Faites appel à vos 5 sens. Mais mettez-vous sans dessus-dessous, car non, ce n'est pas à sens unique, mais bien à double sens.
Waouh !
Comment l'histoire a commencé ?
Je crois que ce surmenage nous guette tous.
Eh ben alors ?
La vie moderne étant ce qu'elle est.
What's your purpose? What's your cause? What's your belief?
C'est du bon pain.
Craqué au bureau.
Bolche.
Réfléchissez.
La vie a-t-elle un sens?
Qui suis-je?
Il est complètement fou, ce mec!